earth was dying. If they said this on the news, if they would clarify the picture instead of seeking to confuse. If you could see the ice caps melting, if you could watch the oceans rise, if you could see the consequences right before your eyes. If you knew the kids were dying, if you could look inside the river where their food comes from, filled with cyanide. If you could hear the parents pleading, if they were looking right at you, if you could see the anguish in their hearts. What if you knew? The bombs were falling, if they showed them hit the ground, if you could see the bodies flying, if you could hear the sound, if you could see the rubble where the hospital once stood, if you saw the child's lifeless limbs, would you hold them if you could? If you knew that they were lying every time they spoke, for every laser-guided pinprick, there were lives lost in the smoke. If instead of just the generals, they had doctors too to describe the carnage of the cluster bombs, what if you knew? You knew what they were saying when they think you cannot hear. If you understood what they do, if for you it was so clear. If you knew they shut down the factory in an economic ruse. If you could kiss the cheek of the child in the sweatshop that made your shoes. Every time we went to war to fight our evil foes, they told you we were really fighting for the good of CEOs. If you could feel the hunger of the many, see the riches of the few. If they told it like it is, what if you knew? You knew that you were living in a huge conspiracy. Would you leave your suburbs, get out of your SUV? Would you hit the streets and fight for all our lives? Would you hold your ground when the stormtroopers arrive? If you knew that the whole planet depended on what you do now, would you take a man with the speed our times allow? If the pundits told the truth for just a week or two and real life was shown on TV, what if you knew?
Hello and welcome to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Today's program, we start off with the other Scott Horton, who is an international human rights lawyer and blogger at Harper's Magazine. He discusses the leaked summary of the Senate's report on the CIA torture and White House's refusal to turn over documents that likely implicate the Bush administration. He and radio host Scott Horton also talk about the Justice Department's corruption and or ineptitude. And then after that, taking lessons from Earth's past, one of the most powerful ways to figure out how the Earth will respond to all the carbon dioxide we're putting into the atmosphere is to look back into the planet's history. And then after that, why we need a carbon tax. Charles Kamenoff is an activist, economist, and policy analyst. He directs the Carbon Tax Center and develops traffic pricing modeling tools for the Nurture Nature Foundation. His works include several books, computer models, scholarly articles, and journalism. He discusses the need for a carbon tax with David Swanson.
I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. And our first guest on the show today is the other Scott Horton. He is the heroic anti-torture international human rights lawyer, the former chair of the New York Bar Association's Committees on Human Rights and on International Law, professor, at least at one time or another, I can't keep track, but Columbia, Hofstra Law School, and et cetera, and on like that. He's a contributing editor at Harper's Magazine and keeps a blog called No Comment there at harpers.org/no comment. Welcome back to the show, other Scott Horton. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good, good. Very happy to have you back on the show. I've been thinking about you as I've been reading the papers lately. All this new news coming out about the torture program, well, and the controversy about what's coming out about the torture program here. So first and foremost and most important, I think, would be the release to McClatchy newspapers of the findings, the 20, I guess, conclusions in the summary that were leaked again to McClatchy newspapers here from the Senate Intelligence Committee report, the summary of the report. And so I wonder what you make of these. Would you like to go through them and talk about your favorites or what you think they might have left out or this kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, this is a very, very important development because this Senate Select Committee examination is the most thorough investigation that's been done to date of the CIA's use of these so-called enhanced interrogation techniques, which what the world now is coming to accept as torture techniques. It was done with full access in theory to the CIA's files and records, a bipartisan effort. It consumed many, many years of preparation, 6,000-page report, absolutely comprehensive. And it's got both the, and I think what's about to be released now, probably within the next 6 weeks, are going to be the executive summary. And a series of findings and conclusions. And lo and behold, McClatchy, which has had sort of the inside track to reporting about this over the last year, has suddenly published last week the conclusions, the findings, and the recommendations. And I'd say no surprise in anything that's come out here. I mean, it's consistent with the reports that we've been seeing over the last half year. I think what's really surprising is that the opposition, which came from within the CIA, which is vigorous, is just sort of piddling out into nothing right now. I mean, they don't really even seem to be able to put together coherent arguments contradicting the report's conclusions.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's funny because all they have to do is deny it and just say the opposite of whatever it says. We did not cut Congress out of the loop. We did not cut the White House out of the loop, but they're not even really going to that effort, right?
Well, I think they've concluded that they really can't deny it. And they can't deny it because their own internal review, which was done to provide basic talking points for the director to contradict this. So as the Senate Select Committee was reaching conclusions, they did their own independent investigation based on the things the Senate Select Committee was looking at, but also their own internal interviews. And what they kept concluding over and over again was, no, actually, what the Senate Select Committee is concluding is correct. And that includes the the question of briefing, proper briefing to Congress, disclosures, the whole dialogue that went on with the Justice Department and what they were told. And I think what we're seeing in every one of these cases is, you know, the CIA claimed that they briefed Congress about all these things, and they did have meetings with Congress and they did talk to Congress, but they didn't fairly or completely brief Congress about what they were doing, in fact.
Well, so I wonder about that, because on one hand, it seems very likely that they went, you know, far beyond what they were given permission to do, and then in some cases didn't tell the higher-ups what it was that they had done, or didn't tell the different agencies what it was that they had done. It would seem like that perhaps makes them more criminally liable, right? Like when we know it's doubly confirmed now, I guess, that they were torturing before they had the memos to cover them for torturing and that kind of thing. But on the other hand, are we now acquitting the White House and the George W. Bush War Cabinet? Because after all, the CIA lied to them about what they were doing. And all George Bush ever authorized was this, but the CIA did this plus that.
Well, let's pause on that for a second. You know, I think the information we've got about them not telling Congress fully what they were doing and not telling the Department of Justice fully what they're doing, that's pretty well documented now, and it's consistent. So in both cases, they gave a sort of rosy, positive, limited description of what these techniques were. And in fact, what they were doing was, as the report says, far more brutal than what was described. So we see some consistency on those two points. That doesn't mean that they weren't telling the White House what they were doing, or giving fair reports on that point. And this, I think, may be the most explosive single point to have emerged in the course of the last couple of months, and that is that there is a large cache of documents, probably more than 900 documents, that the White House was asked to turn over to the Senate Select Committee and did not turn over. And there have been suggestions that, well, this is just sort of routine claims of executive privilege, nothing surprising there. I don't believe that. I think that there are far more substantive issues surrounding the White House turnover, and I'll just give you some examples. So if you look at John Rizzo, the general counsel to the CIA, you look at his book, which is essentially an effort to justify the use of these techniques by the CIA. He makes clear that his whole strategy for protecting his staff when they engaged in torture techniques was very simple, and that was bring the White House along. Let the White House know all about it. Let the White House approve what's being done. Give the White House after-incident briefings about what was being done. And that means here the National Security Council, which means Condoleezza Rice and Stephen Hadley, were being briefed. And in fact, in his In his book, he describes really specific incidents. He describes how he brought in the two people who developed the torture techniques, Mitchell and Jessen, and how he had them give a graphic description to Condoleezza Rice in her office of what was done. So, I mean, these are cases of them giving clear-cut, very strong descriptions of these brutal techniques. Same thing was definitely going on with Hadley. Now, this is the area where we don't see the paper trail. The documents are missing. And these documents would have been really important. And what would they have said at the end of the day? They would have said the White House was approving everything. And I don't just mean at the level of some policy, which they've acknowledged up to this point, but each individual case, when people were being brought in and subjected to these procedures, there was a write-up of it that went to the National Security Council, and the National Security Council was putting its chop on this, saying, yeah, okay to waterboard this guy. After the waterboarding. So all this is being decided inside the White House.
Right, but then I guess what you're saying, though, is, if I understand it right, the memo comes from the Department of Justice. So it's not just that the White House was outside of the memo when they were torturing before the memo was written. It's that they were in on it when the CIA was going beyond what that memo ever pretended to protect. If you buy the theory of the magic memo that can legalize torture.
Well, not quite that way. I mean, the Department of Justice was writing a memo that authorized general techniques. They can do X, they can do Y, they can do Z. These are the techniques that are authorized. It's not a violation of the law if they do this. This is what Jack Goldsmith then called the Golden Shield, right? But what I'm talking about are another set of documents that went from the CIA to the National Security Council and the White House, in which the White House is signing off not on general practices, but here's a guy named Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and we want to waterboard this guy. Can we do it? And the National Security Council is saying, yes, you have the green light to go ahead and do it. And then after they do it, they're doing an after-incident report back to the White House of what they did. Mm-hmm. Okay? So the Department of Justice is not in the loop on that sort of decision, but the White House was. So there will be really quite explosive documents in the White House, which would be, I think everybody would agree, would be very embarrassing to the White House.
Mm-hmm. But you're saying, because they would show that the White House was aware that the CIA was going beyond what the Justice Department ever told them they could do.
Not only aware, it was making the decision to do it.
Right.
Hi, I'm Steve Lerman. I'm the guy that produces, edits, narrates, and promotes Great Speeches and Interviews. I'm the guy responsible for airing in-depth interviews, speeches, and even debates on controversial subjects such as war and peace and climate change and the economy. I hope you like listening to it as much as I like producing it. Access Sacramento broadcasts it on the internet every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. And you can find the podcast at Great Speeches and interviews.blogspot.com, as well as at Facebook.
I will not be pushed, filed, stamped, indexed, briefed, debriefed, or numbered. My life is my own.
For official purposes, everyone has a number. Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
6 of one, half a dozen of another.
Is this what they did to you? Is this how they tried to break you till they got what they were after? In your heads must still be the remnant of a brain. In your hearts must still be the desire to be a human being again.
This is a most serious breach of etiquette.
And now, back to the radio host Scott Horton interviewing the international human rights lawyer, the other Scott Horton.
I mean, we had already read from ABC News about how John Ashcroft said, why are we doing this in the White House? History is going to look very badly on this and that kind of thing. Because the whole war cabinet, everybody except Bush himself was there. The vice president, the head of the CIA, state and defense, and national security advisor, all of them, right?
Exactly right. In fact, you put your finger on that one key incident involving Ashcroft where he's saying, you know, this isn't a smart thing because we're creating a record of our approval of all these things, and future generations will look at this and will think negatively. Well, it could well be future prosecutors will look at it and use this as Exhibit A in a prosecution somewhere. So that at least certainly theoretically is a possibility.
Mm. All right. Now, it does seem like you said that sort of even stop really trying to defend themselves in a way. And, but, you know, they have kind of been sputtering that, well, it's just, it's inaccurate and it's unfair and it doesn't tell the whole story. And please don't tell them everything. And I guess the way I heard it stands last is that the CIA still gets to take a black magic marker even to the executive summary before it's released. Not the White House, but the CIA itself gets to censor the report. But then, so I wonder, what are they so worried about? Are they really worried about, I mean, because is it a fact, isn't it a fact that the CIA, the military, you know, is a different story, but the CIA and their tortures, they only killed two people, right? Or is it more than that? Or we already have a, I think you at least already have a really good understanding of what they were doing, right? So what's in here that would shock you, you think?
Well, let's take that apart step by step. First
yeah,
of
sorry,
all,
I'm kind of all over the place here.
Yeah, does the CIA have the right to redact everything and mark it all up? Well, actually, they think they have that right. I'd say most legal scholars who look at it do not agree that they have that right. The Congress has the right to declassify, release, and publish if they wish. But the more prudent course for them is to ask the executive, is to ask the president to declassify. So they're sending this to the White House, and they're saying, look, you, President Obama, you ultimately make the decision here about what is to be redacted or not. And the president is going to look at the CIA and say, what are your issues? But then I think he and his senior staff are independently going to look at what the CIA is asking for. And I think all the signals I'm getting is that they're not likely to agree with the CIA on all the redactions that the CIA is requesting. But there are going to be some redactions. That's for sure.
Right.
And also note that the 6,000 page report itself is not being released. We're just talking about the executive summary here. And in the background, what has got the CIA so bent out of shape here? Well, look, it's obviously not that they tortured or that they used these techniques. We know that. That's been out there for a long time. I think you put your finger on what is the really hot issue, and that is not that people got abused or got harmed, but there were homicides here, and there are many more than two homicides mm-hmm. here. And I think they're very nervous about that being disclosed, and they're nervous about the sort of accountability that goes with homicides.
Well, so we'll have to hold it right there and take this short break. And pay the bills. We'll be right back with the other Scott Horton, heroic anti-torture international human rights lawyer and contributing editor at Harper's Magazine, harpers.org, right after this. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, Scott Horton Show. And my guest is also Scott Horton. He's the other Scott Horton, heroic anti-torture international human rights lawyer and contributing editor at harpers.org. And we're talking about the CIA murders in the Bush torture regime there. And now, when I was talking with Jonathan Landay last week, other Scott Horton, I believe he said, at least that he thought, that this guy, I'm sorry, I don't know his first name, but his last name, I think, is Gull, who was tortured to death and, I guess, frozen to death at the Salt Pit torture dungeon outside of Kabul, Afghanistan, that he was one of the two that this special prosecutor Durham did a preliminary investigation into deciding whether he wanted to investigate this guy's death or not and decided not to, right? He was one of the two, but or is he a new one altogether?
No, he is one of the, he is one of the 101 cases that was referred to Durham to review.
Of homicides?
No, 101 total cases of abuse, of which there's
right. Yeah. But I'm just saying, because we already knew about two, but I'm saying he was one of the two that was murdered that we knew about, right? Already?
Yeah.
But you're saying you suspect that there are a great many more in here, and that's
I'm aware that there are a good number of additional homicides that are linked directly to CIA incarceration, yes. And
you are aware of that, as in you're reporting that to us because you have sources that know.
That's correct. And I think there's going to be quite a bit more on this in the media in the course of the next couple of months. And I think it's one thing in the SS, in the Senate Select Committee report, is they note that the CIA misled Congress, misled the Justice Department, misled the public about the number of people who were incarcerated and what happened to those people. Mm-hmm. And they were particularly anxious to cover up cases of serious abuse and death.
And then, so I'm very interested to know what you think of the fight between the Senate Intelligence Committee and the CIA over this, because it got to the point where the CIA was referring Senate Intelligence Committee staff members to the Justice Department for a criminal investigation for hacking their poor, helpless computers. What about that?
That's a you know, an amazing series of developments on many levels. First of all, the Senate Select Committee has been never been aggressive in dealing with the CIA. There are a couple of members who asked some probing questions. The committee as a whole has never been aggressive. It's been basically softball. And in fact, I'd say if there was a single Democratic senator that the CIA would want to have handling things, it would be Dianne Feinstein, who is their buddy and has been from the beginning. So to see relations deteriorate to the point where Dianne Feinstein is pressing issues and giving a dramatic speech like the one she gave is amazing. And, you know, it took a lot for the CIA to provoke her into that position. And, in fact, the things the CIA did were totally outrageous, and they attempted to sabotage this entire investigation. They attempted to set up members of the staff, and they attempted to do this to undermine the report. They also dragged the Justice Department into it. And I think one of the most amazing things about this entire story is the CIA's effective manipulation of the Justice Department. That, in fact, is right at the core of the Senate Select Committee's report. They're talking at length, and I mean, there's one passage in this report, roughly 200 pages, that talks in detail about how the CIA misled and manipulated the Justice Department in order to get the memos. But it did. It's engaged in misleading the Justice Department in many other areas. And at some point, you got to ask, you know, is the Justice Department really that stupid, or are they not, in fact, perfectly happy to do cover-up for the CIA? And I think the answer is the latter. They're happy to cover up for the CIA. And that's the reason why Robert Ettinger, the acting general counsel of the CIA, decided when he was coming down to the last round with the committee, he decided to bring in his natural ally, which was the National Security Division of the Justice Department. They're basically the CIA's outside law firm. Mm-hmm. And he tried to enlist them. Now, there's a problem with that. The problem with that is it's a fundamental violation of the Constitution, because you cannot have the executive oversee the legislature when the legislature is performing its oversight of the executive. It's just impossible. So to have the Justice Department step in and do that is a violation of constitutional limits to begin with. And that the Justice Department would ever even contemplate that request was amazing. I would say a pretty serious lapse of judgment.
Yeah.
So what the f*** is this UK? Gone with this US of A in Iraq and Iran and in Afghanistan. Just on a day go by without the Israeli Air Force fail to drop its bombs from the sky. How many mothers to cry? How many sons have to die? How many missions left to fly over Palestine? Cause as a matter of fact, it's a pact, it's an act. These are illegal attacks, so bring the soldiers back. These are illegal attacks, it's contracts for contacts. I'm saying concrete. So bring the soldiers back.
What mean you that you beat my people? What mean you that you beat my people? And grind the faces of the poor.
So tell me just how cool were the Taliban? Sat burning incense in Texas, roaming round in sitting on 6 billion oil drums, down with the Dow Jones, up on the Nasdaq, pushed into the war zones. It's a commercial crusade, cause only all men get paid, and only so many soldiers come home. It's a commando crusade, a military charade, and only so many soldiers come home. Soldiers, soldiers.
fight. It's the size of the fight. In the dark, on the day, or the night. There's no time to reflect on the threat, the situation, the bad, nor the fight. These are commercial crusades, cause all the other get paid. These are commando crusades, commando tactical raid. From the streets and the oil can Baghdad to Tehran and Tel Aviv, bring forth the prophets of the Lord from day. Filling pockets with the prophets of greed. These are commercial crusades, commando tactical raids. Play military charades to get paid.
And now for something completely different.